Let's sit. Let's learn. Let's evolve. Let's talk.
No more whispering in our minds.
Today is Let's Talk Arts with your host, Rachel Sara.
Hello and welcome to 2023. This year we are doing things a little bit differently, and you are now speaking with your newest host of Let's Talk the Arts, Rachel Sara. I am a very proud Grang woman, an artist, business owner, and I wear a lot of different hats that would take too long to list today. But to begin this episode, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we are recording today, the Yuggera and Turrbal people, and pay my respects to elders past and present, and to all mob who are listening. And this week, I am so excited to be joined by Benetta Marie Marbo. Now, I'm fangirling here, obviously, for incredible reasons, as Netta is an incredible artist. But it doesn't stop there. She does incredible work for Sisters Inside for over a decade. She has a rich history within the community, and we'll get into that a little bit further down into the interview. But I am so excited to be joined by you, Netta. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
I just can't get over, you're such a fashion icon standing in here before we start. And there's just so much that you do. But to begin, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm a very proud Nawagi, Mumbra and Meriam woman. I grew up in all up the east coast of Queensland, but I probably spent most of my time in Townsville and the last 23 years in Meanjin.
Yeah, wow. And tell us a bit about what you do. What's your arts practice?
So I think I would say I'm... Actually, I don't even know. I do lots of things and I'm willing to do anything and try anything. So I don't know how to explain myself, but as a visual art, I'm a visual artist,
yeah.
I guess. And so I do probably different things, but it's always like political and probably strong feminism vibes to it.
Yeah. I definitely feel you on trying to explain what you do as a creative, because I feel like it goes off in different tangents. Even writing emails sometimes can be creative for us, but did you always imagine that you were going to be a creative person?
Well, I think, yes, definitely. So when I was like a child, I was not allowed to watch TV. And ooh. My mum was an artist, my dad's an artist, my grandparents on both sides are like in the arts. Well, not in the arts, but like were creative. And so I think that that was something that was always going to be definite. And not watching TV was something... was hard. I really wanted to, but like with my mum, she was an artist, so we would just do art all the time. And so I think it was inevitable.
Yeah. You kind of just a very natural progression to becoming an artist. I love that. Now, you carry a lot of titles. You're a practicing visual artist, a fashion icon, like I mentioned, a youth worker, an activist, a prison abolitionist and a parent. Now, your beautiful daughter is sitting outside and she is currently on her phone. She's not being creative at the moment, but I am just like in awe of everything that you do. Like, what drives you and all of the work that you do?
Well, I really think that it's all connected. Like, I guess I do what I do. And especially now, so because I'm a mother and I want a different world for my daughter and I want things to be better than they were for me growing up. So I think that probably is the biggest driver now. But before her, I think also just being a black young woman in this world or a girl, I also wanted something different for other black girls. And so I think that it's all into like...
Yeah, intertwined.
Yes, very much. And also, like, the work that I do at Sisters Inside is, like, focused primarily on girls and First Nations girls. So
yeah,
I feel like it's all connected and it's always was going to be.
Yeah. So I think that's a really beautiful segue into talking a bit more about Sisters Inside. Now, they're an organisation that I learn a lot from, and also... through personal work, I try to support as much as I can. But tell us a little bit about what you do and through the Youth Indigenous Art Program at Sisters Inside.
So I think like art doesn't get a lot of credit sometimes in how valuable it is in using it as a tool to empower young people to do all sorts of things. And so with the art program, it was kind of like started as a, well, I'm not taking ownership of all the art programs that happen at Sisters Inside because it's been around longer than I've been. Sisters has been around longer than I have been, but, and they have had other art programs, but since I've been involved, I guess the art program has been used as a decarceration strategy. And so that means like keeping girls out of prison or young people out of prison, because let me start from the beginning. So as a part of the art program, young people join in and like be a part of it. And then we have art exhibitions, and the money that's created from the art exhibitions, the young people have always said that they want to pull it back together and do things that they would never normally get to do. So like we've been to the Great Barrier Reef because they wanted to see the reef before it dies, and things like that. So in giving an opportunity for young people to be able to like see a bigger picture and see a world outside of their own world that they have, then creates more choice for them. And when there's more choice involved in their lives, then they can like, I don't know, there's like different paths that they can like take,
yeah,
instead of like what they've been born into. And it's just an idea. It's not necessarily something that is like provided for them. But when we are able to broaden our view on things, then we're more able to do more things.
Yeah.
And so the art group is a part of that. And so young women especially who've never been outside of Brisbane, who've like possibly lived in poverty all their life and never ever been outside of like their suburb, apart from maybe being locked up, can be like change their complete, yeah, world and the view on the world. And so having this space of art, and like not every day we do art, like when we do the art program, like it can be some days we just have like big conversations, some days we just making big mad feeds and big feeds, but it's a community that has been created with art being the center of it to like create something different.
Yeah. And I can see how emotional you're getting just by talking about this. It's obviously something that means a lot to you. And personally, I know how much of a role art has played in my sense of identity and my connection to my culture. But what I want to know is, obviously, there's such a strong foundation within Sisters Inside, but how could the broader community support these programs?
Well, definitely, we have like an option to donate, and so you can donate to the art program because it's fully self-funded. Like, we don't get any funding from anywhere. So it's the young people that actually create the money, like create the funds for all the materials and every opportunity that they get in that space. And so donating is one way. We run a variety of campaigns. We have like a back to school campaign, which is helping like young people get into it, like to buy books because it's so expensive. It's crazy how expensive it is.
Yeah.
And so to even just to like start the year fresh with all the books on your list is like already an achievement and something that, you know, young black kids can be proud of.
Yeah, I definitely think that's such a powerful thing to hear and something that a lot of people probably wouldn't consider, that, you know, even the resources to create that education is so important. Now, of the many roles and titles that you have, prison abolitionist is one of them. So for those of us who may not be aware of that term or may need further education on it, can you kind of explain what that is and what that means to you personally?
So prison abolition is the belief and the knowing and the understanding that prisons aren't useful.
Mm-hmm.
So when we think about who's in prison and think about why they're there, majority of people think, you know, it's like all the rapists and the murderers, but actually it's more people who have mental health issues, who are actually like doing crime to survive, who lived in poverty or living in poverty, who are homeless. There are so many reasons why people are put into prisons that actually don't fix the core issues of why they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And so as an abolitionist, we believe that we need to build stronger communities and more inclusive communities to be able to think about our communities and support our communities better, to address these issues as a community and not as punishment, because it just exacerbates the issues more and then creates more disadvantage, more marginalization, and then also is handed down to the next
generation. It's generational trauma. And so I think when listening to what you're saying, it makes total sense, you know, where there's so much funding. I think I recently heard they are creating another youth kind of prison as a response to the youth crime that we're seeing. So from your position, and particularly touching on the arts programs that you do, what do you see as a better approach to those sorts of things?
Look, if we invested the same amount of money that we are investing into these prisons and youth prisons into the community, and actually provided the community with like youth workers and programs that were actually more beneficial to young people, then you would see a completely different world. Like, think about the $500 million that they're going to, like, they're talking about investing into this youth justice space, how that would look into different, like, different communities for young people, even, like, spaces for young people to, like, to access.
Mm.
Like, if we thought about it differently, instead of, like, in punishment and in, like, in a carceral way.
In a deficit way, sort of thing, yeah.
We would actually have a better future, and children would have a better future. And the more that we, like, really... This is the part that disappoints me so much and makes my heart so sore, is that we actually do not value children absolutely at all. Like, if we really did, we wouldn't be thinking about these ways. And, like, they talk about this group of children that are recidivist and are the worst of all of them, and in this state, and it's only like up to 100 kids. And how the hell do we as a community are unable to like support these children? Like, and even that $500 million, like, if we invested that back into the families of those children, like, what a difference that would make.
Yeah, and I can imagine, you spoke about it earlier, about just the very real fact that a lot of children can't even afford all of the books on their book list. So if we were supporting that to make them feel empowered in their education and inspired, waking up every day to learn something new, how much of a change that could make. Now, I think that is such a interesting take on everything and an interesting way of being. So there's probably a lot of people listening that are really relating to your thought process. So I kind of want to know what brought you into this role?
Like at Sisters Inside?
No, as an abolitionist.
Well, I think it was inevitable.
Yeah.
Everything is. But I think, well, one, I come from a very political family, and two, my traditional lands from my grandmother's side is Palm Island, which is an open air prison, or was an open air prison, a mission, dormitories, which was pretty much a prison. So I feel like that my connection to understanding what colonization has done and brought these carceral mechanisms and these forms of punishment really brought disconnection for me and my lands, and also diluted a lot of my, I guess, culture by it being a mission there our people not being able to speak our language and so on. Not saying that it's completely lost, it's absolutely not, but it's it's made it harder.
Yeah.
And so I think the feeling of loss that I feel from that really, I guess, drives me to be an abolitionist.
Like, yeah. So, and tell me, how old is your daughter at the moment?
She's six. Starts grade one.
And so the legal age for youth to kind of become incarcerated is 10, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, a 10-year-old can be put in a prison in this state.
So for me, I think all of that is so deeply terrifying, but also the work that you do is so powerful. I wonder, how does that manifest in your art practice? How do you carry those themes to then show to a broader audience through your art?
Well, I think a lot of my artwork, I like to, I guess, draw on the strengths of Black women and First Nations women, Indigenous women, Black women, women of colour.
Yeah, the girls.
Without, like you said, not talking in a deficit, but like showing the power, because I think that's important, because the more that we think about deficit and the more we act in deficit, we actually don't get anywhere. And so I think the more that we like empower the way that we see ourselves, the way that we feel about ourselves and show ourselves, I feel like that's more powerful, especially for the generations that are looking towards us. Like for my daughter, I don't want her to see us as like failing people, or you know, like not a strong woman. I want her to see us as powerful and beautiful and all these things.
Yeah,
without feeling like she's
less not. Than. Yeah. Yeah. How do you find being a Black woman kind of in your art practice and connecting your work with the community? Do you feel like there's a lot of opportunities to kind of be your uncensored self, or do you find challenges in that space?
I think if I was able to be censored, I would get probably more opportunities, but I am not willing to censor myself. So if an opportunity comes by and they're like, well, but can you just like tone it down a little bit or whatever, I will say bye-bye, because I'm not about that life.
Yes, I love that. I love that take. So I guess, like, for me, the Mabo name is such a significant kind of presence in history. And, you know, you probably wake up of a morning and you're just you, and it's just the name that you've been blessed to have. But I guess in terms of leaving a legacy, and I keep coming back to the fact that you are a mother, because you're raising your child so beautifully to, again, just be so confident and secure in herself and her identity. What do you think that legacy of, you know, your grandparents and your family has been able to do for, I guess, your sense of identity and confidence?
I think that it's given me a drive to know that anything's possible.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that's probably why I'm a prison abolitionist, even though it seems such a far away like concept and like crazy maybe to some, but I believe that anything's possible. And I think that like what my grandfather did and how and his like journey in like what he did and his activism, it has instilled that. Like, I guess it's just genetics.
Yeah.
And too deadly. But, yeah, I...
Yeah. And I always remember the first time that we actually met was in Canberra, and it was the 50th anniversary of the 1967 referendum and the 25th anniversary of the Mabo decision. So for reference, I had designed the Yes stamp with Australia Post, and you had designed the 50-cent piece.
Yeah.
So I would love to know what that moment meant to you, because I remember being in that room with the original campaigners for the 1967 referendum. And I think how much that decision and also the work that your grandfather did changed the trajectory of, you know, us and our people. And I just felt goosebumps when I was in that room. And I wondered what sort of experience and what do those sorts of projects mean to you in terms of putting our culture, putting, you know, that legacy on the main stage?
Well, I think it's a little personal for me, because it's my grandfather was like a part of that. And so it's always nice to share, like, my personal histories, because that's what it is. And so I feel like it's not, I don't know, it's weird to even, like, talk about it, how people see it. Or, you know what I mean? Because it's like a different experience for me, because it is my family. It is my grandfather.
Yeah.
Like, who was a part of all these things. And so it's hard to, to take the personal out of it and just be, because, oh, that's just my grandfather.
Yeah, just name dropping there. I feel like for me, I'm quietly just shocked at, like, the history that your family has. And I know, like, my family has a lot of, like, strong, I guess, role models to follow, but it's just so interesting to see how, like, you're just embodying your grandfather's spirit and your grandmother's spirit. And again, I keep saying it, but passing it on. And I just think that legacy and that connection of the strength that you feel in your culture is so beautiful and so powerful. And you can really see it come through in your art. But I want to touch on this, given that this week is January 26th and it is Invasion Day. Now, we have seen over the years, and I'll admit I have advocated for changing the date in the past, but as I've grown and evolved, I really am more on the abolish the date. Talk to me about what you see this day as and how it makes you feel.
It's crazy to think that, like, when we think about change the date and abolish the date and all these campaigns that have happened since Australia Day has been Australia Day, which has only been, like, what, in the 90s?
Yeah, it's changed so often.
And, but Aboriginal people have been, like, marching on this day since, like, 1930-something.
So yeah. I don't remember. We'll fact-check that later. But yes.
But it's been a long time, and we've been doing that. But it's not surprising that the colony hasn't
caught on or understood
or... No, we've been doing this a long time. It's not just about this date. It's actually about the colonization of this country and how colonization has affected First Nations people, and that we, like, the injustices, like, recognize that, like, understand that, like, let's have a conversation about that. Let's heal from that.
Yeah, it's obviously a very loaded day, and it's a build up as well. I wonder also, how do you kind of communicate those sorts of significant moments to your daughter, and, like, how does she kind of embody that day?
Well, she comes along, she's been coming to these marches since she was born. So,
what's her shirt say? Pretty powerful, hey?
Yeah, today.
She is a fashion icon of her own.
She's been, like, she was born on Christmas Day, and that the very first march after she was born, she was there. So she was, like, there's this really cute photo of her, like, looking all gangly and newborn-y with all the protesters behind her. But I don't, she'll just grow to that this is...
Like yourself.
What we do, I guess.
Yeah.
It's hard to say that... You can teach somebody with words. You can't really teach with words somebody that age. You teach through doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's what she'll see and what she'll grow and embody as she gets older. But, yeah, I definitely am with you when I think about, when I was younger, I changed the date, but then I grew and understood things differently.
Yeah.
And, have a completely different view now.
Yeah.
I am with abolish the date.
Yeah.
Because I think that if we're going to grow as a, like a... Like, as a country together, like, there actually needs to be an understanding and a deeper understanding of our experience since colonization, and a wanting to understand that.
Yeah.
And I think we'll just be continually march this day for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
If nothing changes.
Yeah. And I think, speaking of experiences, you know, as a creative, it can be hard to know, like, how your work is interpreted by other people or how it's used in the world once you put it out there. You know, as someone whose arts practice is directly connected to your broader, like, political commitments, we touched on it earlier, but do you worry about the way your artwork might be interpreted once you put it out to the world? Or, like, how do you ensure that that message does not become censored?
Look, people can, like, once it's out there, I'm like, fine. People can interpret how they want to interpret, but when they hear me speak about it or I've written about it, there's no denying what it's about.
Yeah.
And so I don't have a fear of people misinterpreting anything. Plus, a majority of my artwork is of beautiful pictures of black women, so let's saturate the world with that.
I love that. Yeah, that's beautiful. We're about to wrap up the interview, but I'm interested to know, as we're both black women and it can be difficult to navigate these industries, particularly the creative industries, and I'm interested to know, does the idea of success play a role in your life and your career, and what does that mean to you both politically and culturally?
Well, I think when I think about success, I feel like I'm already successful, and that's because I do what I love.
I love that so much.
Because I get to, like, in the work that I do at Sisters Inside, I love that. I love it, like, love it. Mm-hmm. And I also love art, and I love making art. And I think because I get to join both of them, I think that's successful, like, personally for me, because it's, I get to just do what I love.
Yeah.
And so I think I'm already successful.
Yeah, I definitely agree you are. And one last quick question, potentially a little fun one, potentially a little serious one. If future Netta was to send you a postcard from, you know, let's say 20 years down the track, what would you love to be doing, and, you know, where would you be?
Oh, no, I would just tell my younger self to continue doing the art, because I literally dropped out of uni when I first left school doing art, and because I was like, what is art going to do in my
life?
It's
changing the world.
And so I wish I just continued doing art from the beginning instead of having that gap. But also I'm appreciative of the gap that I had, because I learned some things and it has enriched my art practice so much more. So I don't know.
Yeah, I love that answer. So for those who may not be aware of where they can find you online, what is your handle and where can we find you?
Well, you can find me on Instagram at Marbolous, MABOLOUS, because I'm
Marbolous. Deadly. Well, Netta, thank you so much for joining me in the studio today. I could talk to you for hours on end. You're just a strong mother, artist, and also personally I've found you so inspiring and so supportive for my own career, and I can't wait for people to have a listen and engage more. And particularly if you don't know about Sisters Inside, please check them out and support how you can. Thanks, Netta.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No more whispering in our mind.
Let's talk Monday to Friday at 9 a.m. on AAA Murray Country, the National Indigenous Radio Service and iHeartRadio. You can catch up on AAA.org.au. Proudly supported by the Community Broadcast Foundation.